Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming Outlander series or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 27 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. I just want to point out how precise you said 27.
I try to do my
tease. It must be really a very important number to you. Is it because you like the number 7?
That I do, but I do try and enunciate when I think about it. Okay, and the tease.
All right, so we have a very long show for you this week, so let's
This is going to be like announcements by fire. I guess that doesn't
make sense. It's more like the Hunger Games of announcements.
Oh, yeah.
We had tributes and several things. We had to kill some off to make room for the ones that we needed to cover this week. So it's very picture heavy. Luckily for us, there was not a ton of new stuff generated by Outlander stars this week, which actually works out perfectly for our needs. But there were some fantastic pictures that were released. The first one we got was the horseback shot of Dougal, and in the background there's Jamie and Claire on a horse. And of course, all of the camera people, like, there's a lot of cameras.
And mics, and oh my goodness, and like someone like, what, holding up a horse? I mean, it's just, maybe it's a horse person, I don't know.
I mean, when you see these things shot and you see them actually in the series, it's like to think that there are literally like 30 people standing around.
And
you're not going to see them.
No.
You will not be visible. They will not be visible. I like to see things like this because then I'm thinking to myself when I go back and see the show, I'm like, there were 30 people in that shot.
Exactly.
And you didn't see any of them. Good job. Our next shot we got Ginger's favorite shot of the week. Another behind the scenes photo. It was looks like somebody watching the dailies or the reels. Of a scene shot between Claire and Frank. Yeah. Director's View is what the title was.
But it said Wartime Goodbye.
Wartime Goodbye.
From Instagram again. And, oh.
Such a nice shot. I like beautiful the coloring shot. Used.
I know. It looks just like, there may not be a blue light, but just the hue of everything in there is pitched with this blue.
I think that's on purpose.
Soft.
Because that evokes, that color is a very cool color. It's evocative. It evokes the feelings that they're trying to get across, the feelings of loss and sadness.
And separation.
Yeah. So, well done. We also got a new view. We've seen this dress several times.
And we've seen her, I think, holding it before. Out in the field with Gellius or something. Mm-hmm. She was in the dress. Yes.
It might be the same basket, but I think this time it's got a picnic lunch in it.
Since she's in the same dress with a basket and also in a stable.
In the stable.
Sorry, the stable. That makes me think, I asked Summer earlier this week, I said, is that a picnic lunch for Jamie? And she's like, I think maybe.
That's what I think. I think I've saved this one for last for several reasons. One, I believe it was the last shot that we've received this week. Yeah. And two, there's just no better shot released this week, in my opinion. Ginger obviously has a thing for Frank. But for me, this shot was the shot of the week of Jamie. And it is Jamie. It's definitely
totally
Sam
Jamie.
Sitting there. But it's a picture of Sam, but in this picture, he is Jamie.
He is totally in character. He did not break it for a minute. Good grief.
He didn't even break it while some lady is applying something to him.
Painting him.
Yeah. Painting him with, I'm assuming, like a wound.
Yeah.
Wound painting. And like I stated earlier this week, I would really like that job. I don't think I'm remotely qualified for it, but I would definitely learn. This week, we have a special treat. I think that pretty much any guest we have is a special treat.
We're always really excited to have guests.
You don't
just
have to listen to us. You have a nice third point of view and a third voice. So this week, our special guest is Marley Bird.
We would like to first welcome you to the Outlander podcast.
Hi, thanks.
And we want to know about you. We've read the About You section on your website, so we know a little bit about your story and your journey. Mm-hmm. But what always inspires me and is really, really great to read and learn from the person themselves is I love hearing stories about how people are on a certain track or doing something, and then they either discover what they're good at or discover what they love and not just go for it and actually do something for fun, but change their entire life's course. Those stories are so inspiring to me, and yours seems to be one of those.
Yeah, it absolutely is. It's actually kind of fast to some of my high school friends and college friends who knew me prior to knitting and crochet. And they're just like, I can't believe how far along I've come with this craft. I remember I was talking to one of my friends in college. I was an athlete. I used to throw the shot put and the discus and the hammer. And earlier, the first 3 years of college, I didn't crochet or knit, but I did in my senior year. And so my teammates from earlier years, they're like, I don't remember you ever doing any of this. And then all of a sudden one day I call them up and I'm like, hey, guess what? I have a book coming out, you know? And they're just like, what the heck? How did this happen? You know, it's very serendipitous how it all kind of eventually came together at the right time in my life, the right time for the industry to accept, in a sense, new designers and welcoming of new medium, because I came in not only as a new designer, but also as a podcaster. And so when my whole life got turned upside down, I sound like I'm getting ready to start a Fresh Prince song, but it's not, I promise. So when my whole life got turned upside down and I left my work at Northwestern Mutual and decided to come home, and I was pregnant with our third child, and it just was not cost effective to have childcare and both my husband and I working, I became more and more obsessed with knitting and crochet. And I just knew that it was something I wanted to do. I wanted to do something in this industry. I had no clue how to go about it at all. And one day a fellow blogger happened to say, pretty funny, you should do a podcast. And I said, okay. So that very day I Googled, what is a podcast? And the rest is history. So I just jumped in. I was lucky that I was a stay-at-home mom, and so I was able to kind of dabble a little bit in the design side with the full intention of having it become a full-time career eventually. So now it's been, gosh, 7 or 8 years, I think 8 years that I've been doing this. And I'm at a point in my career now where all three of my kids are in school. My husband has a wonderful job, and his job actually is flexible enough that it allows me to travel to teach at various venues. And I do write books, and I do the podcast still, and I'm creative director for a yarn company, and I do work for magazines and other yarn companies. And then I was on a TV show. I filled in for one of my really good friends on the Knit and Crochet Now television show. And so it's just, my life has been very blessed. I really feel like if you're following a path that God really wants you to go on, you just can't go wrong. And so I've been very lucky.
Now, I would say that knitting and crocheting kind of disappeared for a while, but it seems to have been making quite a comeback in the last few years.
You know, it's funny you say that, because they never disappear. They've all been there. It's just, if you aren't in that market, that circuit, you don't see it. And with the last, gosh, 8, 9, 10 years of the social media aspect coming in full-fledged, you really tend to see it much more mainstream, or we're just out in the open more. We came out of the closet, so to speak. And so it, as prevalent as it always has been, the Craft and Hobby Association, or the market for craft and hobbies in America, is huge. It's a $1 billion industry. And crochet and knitting is a huge part of that. Quilting is another massive part of that. And so it's always fascinating when I hear people say, oh, I used to knit or crochet, but then I didn't do it, you know, or nobody does it anymore, or, oh, it's back in vogue. It's always been there. It's just maybe you haven't seen it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I remember you said about 8 or 9 years, and I think that's right on the money, because without saying the exact year, it was a little more than a decade ago that I was studying overseas, and it happened to be in Scotland. And I was in my dorm room, and a friend who was visiting, she went to the same university, but she was visiting for the day or something, and she actually came over to watch a movie on my computer, but she brought her knitting utensils. Yeah. Is that the right?
She brought her knitting needles
and a little bag. And I said, if you brought those here, you know, just to kind of to knit while you watch something, why don't you show me? And I never actually went forward with it, and I did not retain it, because I do know that, like with anything, you have to actually practice to be able to function with it.
Yeah.
But I know once you have it, you can do it. But it's something that I definitely did not work on after those a few times with her.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember that. And she was, I won't say my age, but she was a little bit younger than me. So she was definitely in her 20s. And this is back approximately a decade ago. So this is about, and this is overseas.
Yeah.
So this is about the right time frame that you're talking about.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't mind saying my age. I'm 36. And I started my very first project I ever crocheted. I learned right before my 21st birthday. And it's just, I loved every single minute of it. And, you know, you mentioned your friend bringing it to watch a movie on your computer. That's one of the beauties of this particular craft, is that it's so portable and it's something that you can do while you're doing other things. So for the person who just is always antsy or always has to kind of really be doing something, it gives you a chance to have your fingers moving and actually accomplishing more than just one time. I joke around with people that I'll go to the grocery store, and first off, I have 3 kids, right? So getting to go to the grocery store by myself is a true treat in itself. But I will pick the line that has the longest line to check out so that I can stand there and knit a little bit before I have to put my stuff on the conveyor belt. So I've had people say, oh, I could never do that. I never have time to do that. And I'm thinking, okay, you're in line right in front of me, but you're reading a magazine and I'm knitting. So it's all about where you make the time to do that stuff. So that's like one of the things I love about our craft. And it is, there are so many young and old and, I mean, different races and different genders. Everybody knits. You'd be so surprised. I've had knitting classes that I've had a 11-year-old little girl, an 80-year-old woman. Let's see, there was a Christian, a Catholic, a Muslim, and a guy. We were all in the same class. And it was just, we all just got along wonderfully. And like, we had great conversation. And you know what I mean? Like, there were no sort of boundaries there at all. It just, we all came together for this one thing. And it was just amazing. I loved it.
That's something that's interesting. I've heard of, you know, I have heard of a knitting circle. And
yeah,
and that's kind of what you're talking about. It sounds like it also can, as you say, either get through potential barriers that may be there, or at the very least or most, bring people of so many different backgrounds together.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's also a conversation starter.
Yes.
I find that if you have some sort of knitting or crocheting with you and you're working on a piece, invariably, no matter where you are, someone will come up and say, oh, what is that you're working on?
Totally. Totally. I mean, and crocheters and knitters tend to be some of the most friendliest people. And I kind of have a theory. It's because they kind of have this zen quality about them, because they're sitting there. There's this natural kind of clicky motion of the needles, or natural swooshy motion of the crochet hook, and this fiber going through their hands, whether it's soft or, you know, whatever it feels like. Like, there's all sorts of, the senses are just appeased. And so you have this kind of zen, relaxed feeling about you. It's really nice. So crocheters and knitters, definitely, they will go up and talk to anybody who has a hook or a needle in their hand. And, you know, what are you making? What pattern is it? What yarn are you using? You know, who taught you? I mean, just everything under the sun.
Now, I read on your website that you learned to crochet from your grandmother.
I did.
I also learned from my grandmother. I don't remember the year, but it was quite a while ago. It was definitely in the earlier mid-90s, and to crochet. And that was something I did for a little while, but I didn't keep up with it. And now I couldn't. I think I could pick it up again. I know I could, but I lost that skill, and I would need to rediscover it. But I believe Summer does still now crochet and knit.
Yes. I would say that I'm a better crocheter than knitter, but even that I say is stretching it, because I can't read a crochet pattern to save my life. They're like, the terminologies in a crocheting pattern like hurt my eyes. But if a knitting pattern makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Have you ever?
No, I can knit, but that takes a lot more concentration.
Have you ever looked at crochet charts?
No, because that's like a map. I would need like the Rosetta Stone to get me through.
Oh.
What?
Girl, I'm telling you, once you get to, though, like, understand what a crochet chart looks like in the sense of what it's saying to you, it's like all of a sudden the matrix comes together and everything becomes so understandable. It's like heaven on earth. Because I'm like you, the words of crochet patterns trip me up all the time. Like, they're hard to read. The crochet charts are just so much easier. So, yeah, and don't be ashamed. Be a proud knitter crocheter.
Yeah. My crocheted items either need to be round, like a hat, or they need to be square, like a blanket or scarf, like with squared edges. But anytime they want you to do something fancy with it, I'm like, nope.
Oh, I wish I lived closer to you. I could help you out so much.
You are not just obviously huge in this industry, you are and growing in this industry. As you said, you have your own podcast, you're an author and a designer, a mom, a wife. You spoke how fortunate you were with regard to your husband's job, et cetera, as to afford you the chance to travel and teach and do other things related to your company and to your craft, but also to your love.
Yeah.
Although we've heard the positives and the blessings of it, what are some ways that you have had or found maybe a challenge that you faced that you treat it as an opportunity to either grow yourself, et cetera.
Yeah. You know, I think like any small business owner, entrepreneur, time management is the biggest struggle when it comes to time management for your family life versus your professional life. I struggle with not taking too much on and not being able to say no. Is that the right way to say that? Like, I'm able to say no. You kind of get that mindset of you got to strike while the iron's hot, because what if it's that one time I say no because I really am so, and the next time they come around, they're like, oh, we can't ask Marley because she's so busy. But then you run the risk of accepting the work and not being able to fulfill what it is they want. And so that's always, it's a fine line you have to walk. With my kids, I just find, again, going back to the portability of projects, if I have projects that I'm working on for deadline, whether it's for a magazine or yarn company or whatever, I'm able to bring those along with me as I go to practices, or I used to have to wait in front of the school to pick them up. I don't have to do that anymore. We recently moved and have a fantastic house where the school is literally across the street, so it's awesome. But right. I used to be able to travel with my work in hand. So now, as my business has grown, I have hired on, so to speak, contract knitters and crocheters who will make my projects for me. So all I have to do is set up the pattern and have that part done. So again, it goes back to time management of, okay, the time it takes me to, say, make a sweater is X number of hours. But if I pay so-and-so to knit that sweater, I can spend more time designing 6 more sweaters and get those out to 6 other contractors. So it's all about dividing the time wisely. I mean, you don't see Steve Jobs going out and putting together the iPod himself. He's out there doing the part of the job that was his best part. You know what I mean? So that's been the biggest struggle. Also, not growing too fast, too big too fast, which sounds like a stupid problem to have, but it goes back to the whole don't accept too much work that you can't fulfill. I mean, if I didn't have all of my people in place, so to speak, to make my projects for me or do my tech editing for me or organize my show notes for the podcast or put together my website, I mean, I've got a huge team now that helps me along that I would not be able to do it all without them. And so to bring it all back around and so talk about the family side, I mean, I still find myself working on the weekends to get caught up. I often think about my weekends as a chance to get caught up before I have to start on Monday again and just feel like I'm falling behind. But I, when my kids are like, Mom, let's just go out. Let's just go do something. And I have to just put everything down and walk away and say, okay, let's go have some family time. And I think that's hard. I think that's hard for all parents who work. I think that's especially hard for small business owners who work out of their home, because you're never away from the home. There's never a point of time that I'm just like, okay, my work is done for the day. Like, it's always, okay, I kind of reached a sort of a stopping point, but I've still got more stuff to do. So that's really hard for me.
Something that I thought of while you were answering that, as you were talking about the different dimensions of your life, whether it be personal or professional, was as a podcaster, author, designer, speaking of your professional life, which do you enjoy the most?
In my, like, as far as knitting or crochet?
As far as everything
all
or anything involved in, yeah, all of it.
Oh, gosh. Well, that's really hard because I love teaching. I love seeing the aha moments in the students' eyes, and I love that interaction with people. Like, I like to be in front of people. That sounds so goofy, but I do. I like to be up there trying to explain something in a way that they're going to understand, and I love the interaction with people. Like, I just got back from an event called Stitches West, and at all the Stitches Expos, I host the pajama party, and so at the pajama party, I'm not teaching anything, but I'm in front of people having a good time. I have a microphone and we're doing lip sync karaoke, and like, we just have fun. So I enjoy that part. I enjoy the podcast part because I get to interview all the best people in my industry, and I'm still a fangirl at heart. So I get people on the podcast that I'm just like, I appreciate them not only for the people they are, but for the work they're doing. And I feel like I have such a wonderful job and a position that I can tell somebody, hey, I love the work you're doing. I mean, somebody at Conoco might not get somebody to walk in the door and say that to them, right? So I feel like that's such a treat that I get to do that for the podcast side. side. But on the design side, I love watching the things that, like, they're just images in my head get written down on paper and then have them flourish and get made into something, and watching them go into a magazine or to a book, and then having people actually make those things, and then running into them at these various expos and see them walking. We call it seeing your garment in the wild. So, like, you'll see somebody wearing something that I designed in the wild, and it's just like, it's this rush. I can't explain it. Like, it's such a good feeling, which for me is kind of the reverse side of somebody coming to me and saying, I love what you do. And so I get to do that for the podcast, but I get that same feeling inside of me when I see people make my stuff. So, I mean, it's a little bit of everything. Like, there's really no way to say there's one better than the other, because they all have their little bits that I adore.
Well, bringing it back around, or speaking of podcasts,
yeah,
since you're visiting us in our podcast, yeah, speaking of being able to speak about something you love and interview people whom you find extremely interesting and joy, it is our pleasure. We've already welcomed you, but it's our pleasure, as we said, to have you here and to have made this connection through these ridiculously wonderful books.
You know, everybody that's listening to the show right now, they're thinking, why the heck do they have somebody who's a knitter and crocheter on their show? You know,
that's okay. We're getting there. We're getting there.
They're all checking their iPod, like, am I on the right podcast? What is going on here? No, you know, I love Outlander books, okay? I love audiobooks in general, because think about my job. I'm a knitter and crocheter, so multitask. I don't get it. I am not good enough to sit and read a book and knit at the same time. I have friends who can do that. I prefer listening to an audiobook, so I listen to hundreds and hundreds of audiobooks. And when Outlander was suggested to me, I was obsessed with it. I mean, obsessed with it. And when it mentioned various aspects of knitting and spinning yarn and weaving yarn, I was just like, oh my gosh, this is so great. And it was so specific that I was like, I wonder if Diana Gabaldone is a knitter or crocheter. So on Twitter, I happened to contact her. And she was like, of course I am. And I asked her if she would ever join me on the podcast sometime to talk about the books. And she said, absolutely. And so, you know, that was, gosh, I think that was like a year and a half in the making. And then all of a sudden I was like, let's do this. And she said, okay. And so we scheduled it, and I got her on the show. And so, I mean, I got to talk to her not only about knitting and crochet just briefly, because I didn't want the whole show to be about that. I wanted it to be about the books, because I wanted to talk to her, again, as a fangirl of, there's aspects of the book that I love, there's parts that I hate. There's a part where I read a spoiler and I literally put the book down for months because I was so upset. I mean, I was arrogant enough to say to myself, Diana has just lost touch with her characters. She doesn't know what they're doing anymore. I don't even want to read the books. Like, I was ticked off. And I wanted to talk to her about it. So I had her on my show. And it was, I got to say, you know, for me, it was super highlight of my podcasting career. But it was just such a fun show to do, because I really felt like it was a great connection that she and I had. I tried to make it different than other podcasts that she had done before, because, you know, it has to be hard to get interviewed about something you've done so many different times. She has her stock answers, and I really wanted to try and get a response out of her that wasn't something that was just her stock answer. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, so that's how you and I came to be talking to one another today, is that I love Outlander, too.
Oh, yes. I think we are kindred spirits, especially in that. So before we go on a little bit closer to our read-along, would you like to tell us as well? We've looked at them and we know a little bit about them, but would you like to tell our listeners a little bit more about some ways in which the books have affected your life personally and or professionally?
Well,
I like that laugh.
One of the coolest things, you know, besides interviewing Diana, is that I mentioned earlier, I'm the creative director for a yarn company. And gosh, I think it was last August, we were sitting down at a Chili's and we were just discussing new yarn colors. And I said to them, I said, you know what we have to do? We have to come up with some sort of a theme. And we were just throwing out different ideas. And I said, no, you guys, I think we have to do something like Game of Thrones. And I said, but I don't want to do Game of Thrones, but I'm saying something like that, something that people can feel like they can get behind and we have some sort of inspiration to go from. And Eileen, who is the owner of the company, who has also read Outlander, she goes, oh, you mean something like Outlander-ish? And I said, yeah, like Outlander-ish. And I was like, wait a minute, how about like Outlandish? And so that's how our colors have come about. So we now have 27 different colors that are inspired by the books. What happened, we went through all the color cards and we picked out various colors. And I grabbed various images from the internet of what I imagine like Bree's hair to be, or what I think of when I think of the Highland Hills or the Standing Stones, or, you know, various images like that. And we had a hand dyer take those colors, those images, and pull the colors out of it to create the yarn colors, right? So out of those, we chose the different hues that we wanted to use. And then from there, I got to pick the color names. So I got to go through each color and say, okay, this reminds me of, you know, Lyra, or Leary is what they're calling her, I guess. I always called her Lyra. And so Leary, and this reminds me of Brianna, and this reminds me of Dunbonnet, and this, you know, and I picked all the colors with Carl and Eileen sitting there saying, yes, that works, that, no, that doesn't work, or, you know, I think that one's too hard to say, I don't think people will understand. And then there's the part of me that's like, but the real Outlander fans will understand. They'll get it. They'll see the humor in this, or they'll see the connection. And so it's very fascinating for me to be able to tell people, oh, so this color is named Mo'Cree. And the reason I chose this beautiful purple color for Mo'Cree is because it makes me think of like this love and happiness and just, you know, somebody saying, oh, you're my heart. It just, I like that, you know, idea. So it's just a lot of fun to be able to talk about the yarn and the colors of the yarn to fellow Outlander fans. And oh my gosh, there are so many knitters and crocheters who are Outlander fans. It is unreal. Unreal. So it is just, it's so much fun.
Well, speaking of that, how was the response?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, of course I tweeted and Facebooked about it in all the various groups, you know, the Hugh and Hooligans. I love them, by the way. They're the best group on Facebook. I love them. and so everybody's just like, oh my gosh, they're beautiful. I've got to get some. And many people are picking colors based on names because it's like speaks to them. For example, I didn't name any of them Jamie because I feel like how can you pick a color that is Jamie? And so I named this beautiful blue color Dinnefash because Jamie always says Dinnefash. And so that's our quote unquote Jamie color. It's supposed to be like the color of his eyes. And I also didn't name one Claire. I named it Sassenach, and that's our natural brown color because of her hair. And so you'll find people who are buying colors based on the various names that they have. You know, like there's a Gilas, there's a Roger, there's a Murtaugh, there's all sorts. And so that's been really cool. But then at this expo that I told you I was at last weekend, people were walking by and they would stop and they looked at the beautiful wall of colors. And then they saw Outlandish and, you know, inspired by Diana's books. And they were like, oh my gosh. And then everybody wants to strike up a conversation with you. Have you read the books? Did you know they're doing a series? You know, what do you think of Sam, the guy they have for Jamie? Like, it's become, like you said, how people connect over knitting and crochet. It's this whole other avenue for us all to connect. So the response has been really, really good. It's just, I love it. It's so much fun. It's so much fun to talk about yarn and Outlander to people. I love every moment of it.
We can hear in your voice, not only in your words, but also in your voice, how passionate you are about your industry and also about your creations, because I am not yet a knitter crocheter, but just hearing about these colors, and I have seen them and they're beautiful. I've seen them online and they're beautiful. And just hearing your excitement about them gets me more excited to maybe pick up some needles.
That's so cool. You know, the cool part about it is that it's not just the colors of the yarn, like the yarn itself is it's so amazing. So for all the knitters and crocheters out there who are very passionate about what yarn they use, I mean, this yarn, it's fantastic yarn. So you just can't go wrong with any of the colors you choose. It's amazing.
Excellent. Awesome.
Now, if there were some new knitters out there
or
people who wanted to learn to knit, are there any, do you have a favorite book that you would recommend to teach with or to learn?
I'm going to tell you two books, okay?
Okay.
The book that I'm going to recommend first is Knitting for Dummies, the third edition, because I was actually the author of that one. But the other book I'm going to recommend, because I personally believe it's much more user-friendly, which is probably not the good thing to say, but it's Stitch and Bitch by Debbie Stoller. It's layman terms, very easy. It's an awesome book. So I like both of those books. But, you know, Crochet for Dummies, because I did it. I did a lot of the patterns in there. I actually even was photographer for some of the pieces. The new cover image, I took that picture. That's one of my good friends wearing that scarf. So it's a lot of fun.
I'll have to look that one up. I have seen Stitch and Bitch.
Yeah.
I believe I think I have, I have two versions of Stitch and Bitch.
Yeah, there's like three out there. But then there's a crochet, like the Happy Hookers, the crochet version. And then there's the Son of a Stitchin' Bitch, which is, it's all male patterns and stuff. It's fun. Mm-hmm. Debbie Stoller does some wonderful stuff. I did some work for her too. She's a wonderful lady.
Wait, I'm stuck on male patterns. Is it for men?
Like for men, yeah.
Oh, got it. Yeah. I want to make sure I understood that correctly. Yeah. Okay. Excellent. How can people get a hold of you, find you, find out about your designs, your podcast, etc.?
Okay. So I'm Marley Bird, and that's M-A-R-L-Y. There's no E. And Bird, my friends say, like the finger. So Marley MarleyBird.com. If you go there, you'll find a lot of information there about where I'm teaching, various classes I teach online at craftsy.com. And you'll find a link to the podcast there as well, which is called Yarn Thing with Marley Bird. And I called it Yarn Thing because it's not about knitting. It's not about crochet. It's about the yarn. And so I'm one of the few podcasts that actually brings together both crafts. And funny little note, I was the very first crochet podcast on iTunes. So it's kind of fun.
I look forward to downloading more episodes.
they're a good time. I laugh a lot. And we give away prizes. So you can always listen live and win prizes, or listen later on and win prizes. There's always prizes.
Oh, that's
like yarn prizes.
We do like that.
Yeah, we do books and we do, you know, needles or hooks or whatever. If somebody's on the show, I mean, when Diana was on the show, we gave away copies of the first 7 chapters of Moby coming out. Like, there's always prizes.
We have already said on Facebook, Twitter, etc., which chapter it is. It's chapter 22, Reckoning.
Yeah,
but I think we said it, but we may have said it, but I'm not 100% sure we've said all the detail. Could you tell listeners how it came to be that you are joining us for this chapter?
I don't know if you told it online. Well, I picked this chapter because you said the wedding one was already spoken for. No.
Well, that's actually true.
No, you know, the wedding night obviously is amazing. And so that was so much fun. And it's a big part emotionally as you're reading the books, I feel like. But then when you go along, because I feel like you really, really fall in love with the two of them or start to accept it in the wedding chapter. But then you get to this chapter of 22 with the beating, so to speak. And I don't know about you guys, but my feelings went kind of topsy-turvy. I didn't know if I was going to like Jamie or not. And I think that a lot of people out there feel that way. As a matter of fact, I know a lot of people out there feel that way. And so I felt like this was a good chapter that we could have some really good discussion on. So that's why I chose this chapter.
When she first said, you know, what about chapter 22? That sounds good. And my first one, because I don't have these memorized, I'm like, oh, sure, that's available. We don't have a date for that yet. Let me look it up. And then I looked at 22 and I went, wow, she's brave. But yeah, I don't think it's about, not necessarily brave. It's just, you're absolutely right. There's a lot of things that you can discuss in almost any of the chapters.
Yeah.
But this is, other than maybe, without giving a spoiler away, because we are doing a read-along, other than Wentworth, this is potentially the most controversial chapter.
I think it's definitely polarizing.
It's very polarizing.
Yeah.
I know some people who've thought about stopping, you know, not wanting to continue finishing the book when they get to this chapter.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I'm doing a virtual read-along with some of my friends, and some of them picked up the book again after me telling them, look, you got to read it, and they'll get back to this chapter. They're like, oh, yeah, I remember why I put this book down, because I couldn't handle this.
But I think that the way that I get through this book is that I have to fully immerse myself in Claire.
Oh, yeah.
Because Claire kind of works her way through it. Like, she was completely objecting to his handling of it as well. But as she started to understand the time period she was in and everything that everyone was risking, she kind of came around to going, okay, I still don't think you should have done it, but I get it.
Yeah.
And I think that as long as you're in this and you're riding in the car with Claire for this story, I think you can stick through it.
That's a perfect way to explain it. You have to put yourself in her head and realize she's a modern woman that has gone back into a time, and now switch it to put yourself in Jamie's head and think, oh my gosh, what is this woman doing? So yeah, I mean, you have to just be engrossed in the story itself to kind of move along, to kind of, I don't want to say accept it, but be like, okay, I understand.
Well, I think if you come away with it saying, okay, I understand his motivation, I understand why, because of the time, mm-hmm. that I think is a very good way to put it. And I don't like, I agree with you. I don't like the word accept because, but that is from our 20th and 21st century mentalities, schemas, our sensibilities. In the 18th century, there was not a question, yet the times were much different. So whether or not we would, I don't like the word accept, but if you look at it, as you said, from Jamie's time, that was acceptable at that time.
Yeah.
So it's a very difficult line to tread. You're absolutely right. You have to be with Claire, but you also have to be with Jamie.
Right.
Because you have to know that he is of his time and she is of her time, which is not his time.
Right.
So it's, and then if we get into time travel and the,
oh God, you said time like 30
oh
times.
My gosh, time travel. Yeah, that's a whole other podcast. One of the things that, the first thing that made me laugh is that they were either in or just arriving at a place called Doonesbury.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought immediately of the comics. I'm sorry. I was like, what? Really? That's just, I mean, okay. It's not funny, but it just made me kind of giggle. They have just come from rescuing Claire and, or assisting Jamie with rescuing Claire. And they get to an inn at Doonesbury and they have supper. And she says that she is, quote, in disgrace, not just by the way she's dressed and the way she feels, but not a soul is speaking to her. They are, I wrote down, it reminded me the way she was being treated. It reminded me, I've only read about it and seen some TV shows that discuss it, but I've never actually experienced or viewed actual shunning. But it was almost like what I think of with the Amish and the shunning and how people are kicked out of the family, basically. And even though they're 20 feet away from you, they're not there. So that's what I thought of when she was going through this. I thought, you know, even Jamie is barely, he's not speaking with her, but he's like putting food in front of her so she can eat. And that's it. He's not speaking with her. And then up in their room, it's kind of funny but sad. And she's relieved that they're finally alone. And she's like, okay, now this whole thing can end, right? Now we can relax and be amongst ourselves. And Jamie starts to undress and he pulls out the strap from his scabbard and doubles it and flexes it. And she's like, let's just go to bed. I'm tired. And he says, we have a matter to settle first. And this entire, even before the spanking beating happens, this scene up until that, my heart breaks for Claire because spanking is a very touchy subject in today's culture. I realize that. So I'm not even trying to approach that. But even though she's a fully grown,
fully grown adult.
Thank you. A fully grown adult woman. When she realizes what he has said he's going to do, I just have a picture of her in my mind. First she's like, no, and then she's little by little, she believes he's going to do this. She believes him. And I can just see her pleading. And I know the book does not spend long on this, but I just see her in my mind. He feels resigned to it, but very firm that he's going to do it. And she goes from kind of scoffing at it to, oh my gosh, he's really serious about this, to almost not begging for her life. She doesn't fear for her life, but begging for it not to happen. And that kind of breaks my heart because, again, not to give a spoiler, but just, you know, in a few chapters away from now, when they're at a certain place and she reveals a certain thing, he's kicking himself. He's like, I can't believe I beat you for doing that. So it does come full circles, and we do know that. It breaks my heart for Claire that she's begging for him not to do this.
Well, but also you need to think, for her, this is probably the first spanking she's ever received.
Yes.
Because she was brought up mostly by her, you know, her single uncle, who I'm sure never laid a hand on her. So, I mean, this whole idea of this must be totally foreign because, you know, she grew up not ever having that being done to her. And then all of a sudden, now she's a grown woman thinking she's totally out of that phase of her life where someone could physically do that to her. And now she's, like, incensed about the whole thing, which I don't blame her.
Yeah, I don't blame her at all.
Some grown person tried to spank me now. I'd probably do the same thing.
You would fight back. Another man, even making the same decision, may not think that he has to explain anything to her. You know, another person could have said, okay, you come here. You know what happened. You're going to be beaten for it.
Right.
He is not apologizing for it. He takes a lot of time to talk to her about how important this whole situation was and how close they all came to being killed, or for himself, beaten and hung.
Yeah.
So he tries to make her see how important this whole, how dangerous this actual situation was and now still is.
Do you ever think to yourself how lucky it is that she got connected with Jamie out of all of the out of the men that were available in that century? I mean, seriously, she got way lucky. Not just because he's such, you know, a good-looking man, but he's thoughtful in his process of, you know, how he approaches things. And like you said, he explains to her, look, you know, I get it. You're going to be upset. You're probably going to scream, but you're getting it. Here are the reasons why. And there aren't many men out there, I think, that would have done the same. I mean, Dougal certainly wouldn't have.
No, he would not.
Beaten her, or
he no, wouldn't have.
Explained. He would have just beaten her.
Oh, yeah. Have explained to her.
I'm like, he certainly would have beaten her.
Oh yeah.
But I think that it comes back to everything else later in the chapter when he starts talking about his father and the beatings that he received from his father. Yeah. Was that he was basically doing to Claire what his father did to him. So his father would always, you know, give him a detailed explanation of why he was being beaten, because it's important that before you get a beating, you know why. Mm-hmm.
And he also said that the worst thing was the looking forward to it, not
the anticipation.
The anticipation, or if you knew it was going to come, say, 10 hours from now, that's a long 10 hours. If you got in trouble and he said, okay, I'm doing this because of X, and come on, let's get it over with, at least you didn't have, you know, X number of hours or minutes to worry and to panic about it, because the waiting can be the worst.
Yeah.
As I said, my heart breaks for Claire at this moment, and she says she's sorry, and it just reminds me of, again, not to get too far off onto that subject, but it reminds me of a child saying, I'm sorry, I won't do it again, I'm so sorry, and they totally mean it, but they are also at the same time afraid of the pain, and the stern, it breaks my heart, it truly does, so I do understand people being put off by this. It shouldn't be something we accept easily, absolutely not, but it should cause us to think. And it should bother us. I definitely think that it should bother us. And it does, and I think that's good.
I mean,
and I think it's a good, important conversation to have.
One of the good things is Jamie is doing this as a way of, look, you've put people in harm's way, and so this is why this is happening. It isn't that, oh, I'm angry because you said something wrong to me, you know what I mean? Or, you know, like it's kind of a saving grace about it. It's like, look, you have this potential of doing harm. I don't know where you came from, but obviously you aren't in where we're coming from. And so you need to have an understanding. And this is his way of making sure she understands. It's like, okay, I won't do that again because this is going to happen, you know?
Exactly. I wrote down a few notes of exactly what you just said. He says, he has great insight, and I think I wrote down he's exactly right and exactly wrong at the same time, and that is, he says, you come from a place where things are easier, I think. And I think in a way that's true with mechanized farming and, you know, shops to go get your food. All that, in many ways, it is true. 'Tis not a matter of life or death where you come from to disobey orders or take matters into your own hands. Of course, that is, outside of the war, maybe true. At worst, you might cause someone discomfort or be a bit of a nuisance, but it isn't likely to get someone killed.
Right.
And this is where I say he's partially right, or actually really right, and also dead wrong. Because in her situation in the war, if orders were not obeyed, people died.
Right.
So he actually is right about her general time period. Life is much easier. But her life that she experienced in her time with the war, he's dead wrong.
But he would never have that concept in his head anyway,
because
where he comes from, women don't fight.
Right.
And women aren't part of the war effort and things like that, so they would never be exposed to anything like that.
Well, not that she was just involved in the war as a combat nurse, but just that she would be from a place or time with mechanized warfare is what I'm saying. He says that he knows she's used to thinking for herself and not letting a man tell her what to do, and I think he's probably right there,
yeah.
But he gives her, and this is not just him explaining why he's about to do it, but the importance of it. Anthropologically speaking, his words are very important. He gives her two reasons that he has to do this. Number one, so that she will know deep down that he means it.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, so the others affected by what she did, not just him. She just disobeyed him, and that's all, at least at first, that's all that she thinks.
Yeah.
As she comes to realize, oh, holy crap, it wasn't just him who almost got killed. All of these men could have been killed.
Right.
And so as they're in their clan society, this is a wrong that had to be righted. So other than keeping them safe by traveling at night and, you know, keeping them away from the soldiers as much as they could, and that was the men's job to keep them safe, there was a wrong that had to be righted. And the only way to right that in their time, at that time, was this. In a way, that's great because, quote-unquote, all it took was a mild beating, and then the next day they were joking with her.
It would have just been a spanking if she hadn't fought back. So it would not have escalated to the degree that it did. And I'm not you know.
You're not condoning it.
I'm not condoning it or advocating for what he did. Yeah. But in Jamie's defense, he had no intention of beating his wife going into that room.
he had every intention of spanking her.
That's what I'm saying, spanking her, but
he never
what he intended to do was a far cry from what actually happened.
I would agree with that. I think, you know, as somebody's wiggling around trying to get away, scratching and scraping or whatever, and he had to end up putting his knee on her back and, as she said, beating her to within an inch of her life, which, you know, could be an over dramatization or, you know.
Well, it has to be because she was still breathing and able to walk.
Exactly. Okay.
So it could not have been an inch of her life.
To her, but I could imagine his emotions getting high of like, you know, dear God, just let me finish this. Let me just be done with this.
As we learned, they struggled because he has a gouged face and a bitten wrist. And so she definitely left her mark on him, which I say, you know, good for her.
Yeah.
And she calls him a sadist. And I think this is just before, but she calls him a sadist. And he says, I don't know what a sadist is, but I never promised or I never said I wouldn't enjoy it. So he did enjoy it some, or we learn later, I guess, a lot.
I feel like he's, even at that moment, he still has his humor fully intact, which must have been so infuriating to her,
that he was still finding ways to make jokes.
I would have had a really hard time. I have a really hard time not laughing first off, I laugh when people get hurt and stuff. Like, it's a terrible, terrible habit. Or not habit.
It's hysterical laughter. I have
I have it really bad. If Jamie came towards me and said, okay, it's time to take, I mean, I would start laughing at the guy.
Me too. No, really, don't hurt me as I laugh at you. Yeah, okay. That's, no.
Absolutely.
Oh, so when they went downstairs the next morning, as we said, it was literally like nothing had happened. I mean, there was no hostility, but the men were slightly restrained. But they were already starting to tease her and talking about how a blistered bum never did anyone any permanent damage. And, you know, it was a lot lighter, the atmosphere. It's like, although you didn't have to, you know, go that far, Jamie, but the fact that they knew what had happened...
Uh-huh.
Regardless to what extent, it was like, okay, that debt has been paid. We're still in trouble, but we're now at least back together on the same standing as we were before.
Don't you think of that? That's exactly how men are. It's like, okay, they have a scuffle, they fight, and they move on. Like, we're
exactly.
Us women, we're like analyzing the whole thing. He did what? Oh, no, he didn't, you know? I mean,
yes.
It would have been a completely different situation if it was a bunch of women in that room.
Well, and that's, I think that's also a good point, because with women, we do try to talk. We're more, for the most part, I wouldn't say all women, but we're very, like, in our brains and very, you know, thinking. Whereas a lot of times men are more men of action, if you will.
Yeah.
So that's what they understand. That's the language they understand, whereas we are more like, we want to talk it out and get to the nitty-gritty of it, figure it all out. That's why probably Claire thought that her saying, I'm sorry, would make it okay.
Right. Yep.
Maybe it was just one day, but it seemed like it was two nights at the inn, right? They were there for a few nights before they took off, because he slept for two nights on the ground. So they were there at least the night that he beat her, and then the second night. There were at least two nights there.
No, it wasn't two nights. It was one night, and they slept through the day and left that night.
Yeah.
They were traveling at nighttime.
Okay, but he slept on the ground twice.
Yes.
So once it was right after he beat her.
Yes. Yeah.
And then during the next day.
Yeah.
During
breakfast.
Okay. After breakfast. So the next day, basically, when she's awake, she spends time doing anything but sitting, whether she's eating or whether she's doing, you know, some chores or some hemming or some mending. She's doing all of these things standing up. That night, when they go back up to their room, she shuts the door in Jamie's face and says, you know, basically, you're not sleeping in here.
Right.
She admits to herself that Jamie was right in that she didn't take things with a proper seriousness.
Mm-hmm.
And she admits to herself that she still sees the time, less now because of the events, but she still sees the time as a play, or the words that Diana uses, a fancy dress pageant, compared with the mechanized mass warfare of her time. And then I wrote, Claire gets quite philosophical. She talks about, speaking of warfare, she thinks about killing, and someone is killing with a musket or a bayonet. She, to her, that means, isn't it murder and not war? Because you can get so close to someone, it's much more personal.
Mm-hmm.
If you can see someone's eyes as you kill them, how can that be war? Isn't that murder? And I would just add to that, well, what is war is part of war not calculated murder? It may not be personal, but it's mass murder. I mean, you know, that's a very touchy subject too. So it's just a lot of questions can come from her philosophizing. And she says, or Diana's words, obviously, how many men does it take to constitute a war? Because the men here in the Klan, these however many men are there, they take the threats against them very seriously. And to them, it is a type of war. Whereas she sees war as this massive world scale, country, you know, continent scale war in World War II. This war that was bigger than anything at the time had ever occurred. And so she says that when she was being accosted by Randall in his office, that for a time there, she was not seduced by him, but she was reminded of Frank, of course. And then by the harsh, harsh treatment of Randall, it blew her back into her present moment in the past. As she says, her two worlds collided. And she had never been more aware of the fact that she was not in her own time as she was at that moment. And she says that time now has become her real time. Mm-hmm. And that, so all of this philosophizing Claire does about war and about relationships and about her journey and how more and more Jamie is now becoming more and more real to her.
Well, that's what she said, is that she said that Jamie is more real to her now than anything else.
Exactly. Right. And so we can see even more evidence of the ties more and more, that she's becoming more and more tied to this time, or is making more connections to this time. Since she had left her horse in that little glade somewhere before going for a walk in the stream, she has no horse. So Dougal got her another horse, and she named it Thistle, which I thought was kind of cute. And even though she did them a big disservice, she almost got them all killed by her actions, and then the men were understandably angry, and there was this debt that had to be paid, or this thing that had to be put right, so Jamie spanks/beats Claire, and the men are like, okay, it's done, and, you know, let's go on now, you're forgiven, let's, you know, it's going to take a little time for maybe emotions to mend, but as far as going on and being a Klan again, or being talkative and including her again, she's no longer being shunned. So Murtagh goes so far as to put a cloak on her saddle for her to ride on to help her relieve some of her pain. And they stopped every once in a while so she could rest her behind and stretch. So you can see, even though it seemed like their honor, not their honor was back, but the things were a little more balanced now, they still realized that past that moment, they were not going to make her suffer. She had the pains, but they were not going to make her suffer further. As a matter of fact, they were going to try and do their best, once the debt had been paid, to alleviate some of her suffering if they could help it. So that really touched me, what all the men were doing. She says that she thinks her horse got a stone in its shoe, and Jamie says he'd stay back with Claire so they can walk her horse, and, you know, we know this is so that she can rest, save her bottom from more pain. Thus ensues one of the longer, intense conversations, another time where we learn so much about Jamie.
Yeah.
And this is where you guys already mentioned that Jamie talks so much about himself and what he did to Claire. Is he is a product of his time and of his culture and of his upbringing. Yeah. And now we hear a little bit more about that. And Jamie talks about how much he's had his backside whipped.
Yeah.
And that he thinks he usually deserved it when his dad did it. He really, looking back, he thought his dad was pretty
fair
about it.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, something has spooked the horses, and Jamie goes off to see what it was, and then he comes back and gets her and shows her some wolves that were eating their kill, and just seeing kind of the circle of life kind of thing, seeing nature, seeing things, or seeing this brilliant moment that not everyone gets to see in or of nature, that it was part of his, maybe not I'm sorry, because he wasn't sorry for what he did.
Right.
But he did not want to cause her pain past what was necessary for the beating. And she thought it was a way of him for saying, I gave you justice as I was taught it, and I give you mercy so much as I can. And he wasn't able to spare her pain and humiliation, but by sharing with her his own, he tried to
mend
what was between them.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Maybe quoting Brave,
mend the bone that was broken.
There you go.
Oh, so you like that. So, and we also learned the last time he was beaten, it was that he had said something kind of not so nice about Mrs. Fitz when he was staying at Leek. Then she stood up at the hall gathering and told Colm in front of everyone. And then he wanted to be beaten with the fists by Angus. And they're like, no, if you're going to act like a child, you're going to be treated like one. And his poor wee, not so wee Jamie's kilt was lifted in front of the entire hall. And he was beaten, I guess, with a switch or a... I don't think he was... Probably wasn't his hand. It probably was a... It may have been a leather belt or something. And then afterward, he had to go across the hall, come back on his knees and apologize to them, and then sit down for the next hour. Not just his bottom hurting on his knees, but he had to pee. I think that... I don't know if they're going to have a younger version of Jamie, because I don't know... First of all, they may not include this, but if they do recall this as a flashback, I believe Sam for 23. I don't believe Sam for 16.
No, I think this actually would work just fine with him telling the story, which is what they're doing in the book anyway. So, and it was a funny story. It would be a nice little monologue.
Absolutely. And Claire makes the connection between his experience at 16 and also his helping Leary. And so she can kind of reconcile that even more now. Claire says something about, oh, so that's why you married me, so basically you could do certain things, right? And he says, well, yeah, marriage makes sacrament out of things you'd otherwise have to confess. So Claire collapses in laughter, and she says, oh, Jamie, I do love you. And I think isn't that the first time she says that?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yay, that's right. And I read on, and he's like, wait. Jamie doesn't say that.
No.
He doesn't say that.
Doesn't say it back.
And she doesn't seem to take it badly.
No.
And maybe not even expecting it. Yeah. Because it does seem,
I don't think she expected it.
I didn't know. I don't think she did. And that's, I think, when it happened so naturally. That's, I think, when it's not that it's not meant when you're saying it on purpose.
Right.
But I think the times when it comes out and you're not even aware of yourself, I think it's a true expression.
That happened with my husband. The first time he told me I love you. It was on the phone. I'm going to totally side note this. He used to call me at night because we lived in different cities. And he used to say, miss you, want to kiss you. And one night he was hanging up the phone. He goes, all right, well, love you, want to kiss you. And I was like, what? So it was like this long dramatic pause. He goes, well, I just thought I'd throw that out there. Talk to you later.
and then
that
he hung
was
up,
the first
right?
time he told you, told me I love you. So then I had to call him back, and I'm like, I love you too. Anyway, yeah.
That's great. No, I love that story. That's great.
Yeah. So I totally agree with you.
And Jamie hasn't said, but this goes back to what you guys were saying about men being typically more people of action. And so Jamie hasn't said yet to her directly what his feelings are. He said in the last chapter, you're ripping out my guts, Claire. I mean, come on. That's almost saying you're killing me here. You know, you have me by the heart and by the balls, and you're killing me here, girl.
Yeah.
So you can read between those lines, but he has not said the words yet. So we do know that he cares for her, and by his actions, I mean, come on. So he was so torn up over seeing her with Randall and just, oh man, that was a rough chapter, last chapter.
Yeah.
So then he shares about how his father died and that he'd come to see Jamie after the first flogging. And then Randall had brought Jamie back into his office to discuss the matter of the second flogging. And Randall was a little bit different. He said that he was sorry that things happened the way they had and wished circumstances had been different. And Jamie tells Claire Randall had wanted him, and that he was very plain about it and said that if he would give him his body, that he'd cancel the second flogging. And if not, Jamie would wish he'd never been born. And what I like is that even if in reality someone truly would consider it, because I mean, come on, something that you might not like, you may hate, but compared to getting flogged and potentially dying, I mean, that's a huge thing that, you know, must be considered. And for a man with his upbringing in that century, you know, many men in today too, but a man with their pride and that upbringing and his, you know, relatively strict Catholicism, all of that, to the fact that Diana didn't write a character that would automatically say, no freaking way would I do that. She writes that Jamie considered it, not because he wanted to, but because he knew what he had suffered. And he knew that a second flogging would likely potentially be the death of him. And Jamie mentions, I think later on, he was given the Bible, a Bible by the garrison doctor, and he said that he did find it a comfort because he was able to, he compared his suffering or his what he was about to go through with the sufferings of Christ. He said, I know our Lord was lashed. There was a similarity, so he found strength in that. But what he didn't say, but what I did remember or think of, is that another comparison between himself and Christ, because he's definitely a Christ figure, Christ-like figure. Another comparison would be, is it at the garden when Christ says, take this cup away from me? If there's any possibility, take this cup away from me. Was that in the garden?
It was definitely in Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yes. We love a musical. Sorry. Summer's taking my moment away from me. But she's laughing. Oh, that's okay.
I wasn't expecting that.
Well, you said it, and all of a sudden I hear the singing, take this cup away from me.
So, okay, I am not a biblical scholar, but at some point he says, symbolically, cup, meaning his, you know, what he was going about to go through. I wouldn't say doubted, but he was scared. He was afraid. He was fully man. You know, again, this is getting into religion, but according to tradition, he was fully man, fully human, and he had thus experienced fully human emotions.
Yeah.
He, according to the Bible, he was afraid, and he said, if there be any way, you know, let this pass from me.
Yeah.
And then he did accept it, but he did say that. So I took that away from this, because Jamie also thought, you know what? I do have an out. I could get out of this. I can't get out of everything, but I can get out of this beating. I've been given away. But then he thought of, I mean, for himself as well, it was not only this, but also he thought of his father, whom he had just seen. And his father had said, you know, I'll be with you no matter what happens. I'll be behind you. Jamie thought his father would not be able to be behind that. Thought, you know, even if he never had to admit it, he would know and he would carry that forever. And it would have been, for him, a great shame, likely. But he chose to go with the flogging, even though he had an out. So I just saw, not the same sacrifice, I realize this, but I did see another comparison.
Well, especially with him and his religious upbringing and stuff, I could absolutely see him sitting in prison as if he was Job or, you know, anybody that's persecuted and kind of having some sort of, like, relational thought about I could totally imagine, why, God, are you letting this happen to me? And just, you know, thinking through all the Bible stories. Absolutely. And we know that Diana, I mean, she's religious. I mean, she thought about the whole thing in church. And so I'm assuming that she would bring in some of those thoughts and views as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So Jamie says no. And this shows how, even though his actions were strong, his spirit was, when I say weak, this is not derogatory, but it's so human. So for us to see this of such a strong character is more heartbreaking, but also more endearing. He not only says no, he says no as loud as he can and uses all these filthy names and words so that not only Randall would hear, people outside would hear.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to make it so that my guess is, we don't have the words, but he probably called him all sorts of names related to what he wanted to do with him and do or to him.
Right.
And said, no, you blankety, 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 blank. So not only saying no, but also embarrassing the heck, / embarrassing and maddening and angering him, so that he said not just to say no, but so that there was no way for him to back down
It takes the option away.
It takes the option away because he was afraid that he may not be strong enough to go through with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, whoa, what a character. Diana allows us to see his humanity, weakness is almost a negative term, but his frailty, his human frailty.
Mm-hmm.
What person would want to be beaten? I mean, come on, when you could have this other out that is not pleasant,
mm-hmm.
but hopefully you were not, probably not going to die from it.
Right.
No, have you seen the movie Seven?
I have.
Oh.
No, I don't even know about those movies. I don't know what. No. I don't know. I don't want to think about any. No.
Oh.
No, Summer.
Seriously?
I haven't. No. Is there. What? People die from things like that?
You'd have to see the movie.
I don't need that movie then.
Okay.
Okay, so anyway, his struggle, he's given an option, and he's afraid, although he's not into what that option is, he's afraid that it would be, he knows it would be an easier route, but he thinks, he knows it would carry so much shame and all of this for his family, for himself, etc., that because he's afraid he may not be able to stick through with the harder option, he goes with gusto, and he makes sure that he has no other option after that.
Right.
And that, woo, I had forgotten that. So that was, that's a huge, so many of these things are so telling of Jamie and his character. And then, so Jamie, in all of this, is telling Claire how his father died, and that he was given this choice, he made the choice, there was no backing out, and his he didn't know at the time, but he found out later that his father was present for the second flogging. And at one time when he passed out, he lost consciousness most likely, but he fell, and his dad and others thought he had died. That just about that time, his father, he had a headache, he put his hand to his head, and then just felt he fell down dead. And so likely a stroke. And then they didn't tell Jamie for a month because they didn't know he could handle it. And of course, by that time, he couldn't bury his father. And because of maybe not shame, but because of, he even says to Claire, you know, maybe my father would be alive.
Right. Well, he still feels, he might have been, but he still, the shame that he feels isn't just about what happened to his dad, but it's because of why it happened. Because the whole reason he's there was because of Jenny and the soldiers and everything. So he still feels the shame of not being able to protect his sister.
Yeah.
And I think that he thought that his father would hold that against him, and that everyone else there still holds that against him. So that's one of the many reasons he hasn't been back home.
Right. Yeah, and he says exactly that. Bring it back to Lallybroch. He says he couldn't bury his father, and he couldn't be home, and he hadn't been home. He was afraid to go. So now we know, and this was not just to tell Claire about how his father passed, but also to let her know truly what it was between Jamie and Randall.
Right.
And what it meant for him to rescue her from him, what it meant to him, and how close he came to death he rescued her, but if he had failed, he definitely would not have gotten out alive.
Absolutely. I was going to say, it just reiterates the fact of him saying, look, you put us all in danger, we all could have died. It's very much more so, I think, poignant for Claire to understand, oh my gosh, yeah, they could have died, she gets that, but then to kind of hear his whole backstory of it, I think she fully finally really gets, wow, this is so much bigger than even what I just thought. And then I'm sure you're getting ready to go into it, but then Jamie, you know, says to her, can you understand now, you know, maybe why I felt the need to beat you?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Claire, so now we know what's really not just at stake, but what really has happened and the importance of all of this. And Claire does forgive him for beating her, but she says, not for enjoying it. I like your laugh. And Jamie also says that he practiced restraint by not, quote unquote, rogering her in that state. And he says restraint, and she's like, what do you mean restraint? I don't think you practice restraint. He's like, oh no, I didn't, I could have rogered you too. So those little things make me laugh. And he wants to know, they continue their ride, it's getting near dawn, so they have to start.
Wait, this line was really funny when he says he was exercising restraint, and Claire says, I was under the impression that you were exercising your good left arm.
So they're back up on their horses, and he wants to know, he's like, look, I'm still a dude. He wants to know when he can share her bed again.
Right.
And she takes her time to form this, and I love the way she did it, and I can just see it with the twinkle in her eye, because she is so, this is so not Claire. And I think he knows this. So she says, will you do me the honor of sharing my bed, oh Lord and Master? And he stops and he thinks, and he says, I will, thank you.
Could you imagine?
And then she quickly pulls out her dagger and holds it to his chest and says, if he ever raises a hand to her again, she'll cut out his heart and fry it for breakfast. And he swears, he makes a beautiful, you know, kind of a ceremonious swear. He swears by the iron of the blade that he would never do so. And he's like, now can we go to bed?
Yeah.
So that, I love that. I mean, yes, it's the characters, but you go back and it's all Diana. And I love how she can get across. She balances the mundane and the serious, and human emotions as fear and just totally opposite ends of the emotional spectrum she throws in there, but she can have you laughing in one moment and then crying in the next moment and then jeering and screaming at the book. And I've never thrown a book down, but I know of people who have thrown books down. So I'm an emotional reader, but I don't get violent with my books. I mean, think about it. Our conversation has gone from how he had a way out and what person would not have taken, how many people would have gone through with the beating to, okay, now I get back in your bed. Awesome. Yeah. I mean, she goes there, can go there so quickly, but it seems like a natural transition, and it does not seem forced in any way.
Right. I think this whole chapter gives you much more insight into Jamie than anything. Mm-hmm. It allows Claire to have more insight into Jamie because, you know, it starts us off with, as we talked about, him being a man of his time, but then you learn so much more about him that he shares with her to have a connection that is greater than just the physical connection they might have. And, you know, it just brings it all back together. I think it not only makes the reader fall in love with Jamie even more, but I think it has Claire fall deeper in love with him. Because I think she's already in love with him, honestly, at this point, but she's not honest with herself about it. And I don't know about you guys, but as I was reading the book, the very first time I was reading it, I was so ticked off every time she kept bringing up Frank Randall. I was like, seriously? You have this guy who, you know, he says the best things, and they're not just lines. Like, you can tell they're from his heart. And I'm like, who the heck is this Frank guy? What makes him so special? You got him. So I was like, I was really upset when she tried to leave Jamie to go back through the stones and got caught and blah, blah, blah. But then when I was talking to Diana about it, she was like, think about it from her perspective. You know, she loves this guy. This is her husband. And she sees an opportunity to get back to him and she takes it, regardless of what her relationship with Jamie is starting off to be, you know? And I get it, but still, I was upset. I was like, seriously, lady, get a grip on it and stay with this man who loves you.
I agree. I think it was my first read of it that I was definitely on that train of thought. And thinking about not only having read it, you know, more than once and revisiting it, you are a little more forgiving, maybe.
Yeah.
And, or at least you have more experience. You know what it's. You know what it how it ends,
yeah.
At least this book.
I think Tobias is going to make us fall in love with Frank and understand why Claire struggles so hard to get back to him. Because I think mm-hmm. that if for the people who have not read the book that are going to only view the series, that mm-hmm. That's vital. They've got to understand what it is that this girl is trying to get back to. Because they're going to have the same reaction I did at the beginning of what is her problem. And I think he's going to have everybody falling in love with Frank, thinking, okay, I can see why Claire wants to get back to him. And that love is also going to transfer over to Black Jack in the sense that the audience is going to be able to view Black Jack in the same way Claire does, where they see glimpses of Frank in him, but at the same time see that the maniacal, sadistic man. And I think that's what Tobias is going to bring to the character.
Oh, yeah. I'm a fan of Tobias, and I think he will do both roles justice. I am so looking forward to, I think I'm almost looking forward to more his performance than anyone else's.
Seriously? Oh man, I can't wait for Sam. I think Sam is the perfect combination of Jamie Fraser in his real life. Like, he's such a flirt, he says all the right things, extremely good looking. I'm super excited about him, like, talking to Claire about this, about things that have happened to him, and having that, not remorseful, that's not the right word, but this somberness about him of, look, you know, I'm not just all sunshines and rainbows. I've got baggage, and this is what it is, and I do love you. Like, I'm so excited to see him portray that. And I'm excited also for Katrina, for Claire, because I think she brings the perfect amount of, like, beauty and sassiness and stubbornness and just everything. I'm so excited about it. But, you know, anyways, so I'm thrilled. I think the casting is great.
Oh, the casting.
Couldn't agree more.
The casting has been, as I said before, when I saw, I was thrilled with Jamie. I think everyone, well, I can't say that. Most people, sorry about that. That's a rewind. Most people were thrilled with Jamie. I mean, excuse me, Sam. Oopsie. When I saw Claire, excuse me, wow. When I saw Katrina, I felt like I had been sucker punched. It was crazy right on.
Yeah.
It was crazy. It, like, took my breath away. I was like, what the heck?
Yep.
But when I found out about Tobias, because I didn't really have a Frank in my mind.
Uh-huh.
I don't really have any of these in my mind. But when I saw Katrina, I knew it was Claire. I just knew it.
Yeah.
But with Frank, I don't really have anything. But when I saw that it was Tobias, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Not just is he a great actor, but that they're going for that caliber of cast.
Right.
We are in the best hands.
Right.
It is crazy. So, oh, this whole thing, it's so much. Like, oh, it seems like it's August now. Oh my gosh.
And I'm so excited about the series. Like, so I love the books. My husband has heard me talk about the books forever. The minute I heard there was the series going on, I was just like, oh baby, you just wait. You're going to watch this with me. You're going to want to watch this with me because you're going to get lucky. He's just like,
I think a lot of ladies have been saying that.
I'm so excited. I told him, I said, I've been trying to get you to read these books for years because it's not a romance. I keep telling him, I'm like, it's not a romance. It's not vampires. It's not werewolves. It's nothing like that. I'm like, it's stuff that you would really enjoy. You'd really like these books. So I'm truly hoping that he'll watch the series with me and fall in love with the characters and have, you know, because he drives a lot too. So I'm like, listen to the audiobooks. You'll fall in love with them. Because Davina Porter does an amazing job reading these books. Yeah. So hopefully he'll want to read the books with me. And that's the best part about the series, I think, coming out, is all the new Outlander fans that are going to come around and read these books with it. Like, I'm excited to watch their excitement again because I get all excited and I love it. I think it's just so much fun. I mean, I've read the books 5 times now, the whole series 5 times. Love it. Wow. I just love it so much. And you get something new each time.
Every single time. Absolutely. And not just every time you read it, 100%. But I'm finding that because I have to read, I don't do more than a chapter or two a week of close reading because it's not just, okay, let me read this chapter so I know what we can discuss. No, I take notes.
Yeah.
We want to make sure we hit the characters, the plot, the descriptions, everything in there. Yeah. And, you know, I still miss things. But when I'm doing this close reading, oh my gosh, how many things have I run into? I just did another reread this summer of the first 2 books.
Yeah.
And then stopped where I was because we started the read-along. So I'm like, I can't do 5 books at once,
right,
and my job and the podcast and all this stuff. So on this close reading for the podcast, so I could take notes, oh my gosh, the stuff that I've missed, even having read it multiple times before. It is a blessing,
uh-huh,
but it's crazy how much each new read brings.
What I think is really cool, too, is as you go back and reread, you know the story, so you're able to catch up on the nuances that Diana adds in, yeah, there. Like, I think it's important, you said that Jamie swore that he would never hurt Claire again, he'd never beat her again. And I think it's important to reiterate that, especially for people who are reading this along with you, because, mm-hmm, that is pertinent throughout all the books. He does not ever do this again.
And exactly.
I think it's okay to say that because I think that's very important. This is a one-time thing of, okay, I'm doing this. We've come to an agreement about this. We both understand. Now let's kind of move on. You know, like it's a good point.
I like what you said there. And this is the last point that would try to bring in a little bit of the gist of the reader, all the reader comments we got or the reader points,
sure,
were. Because this is such a contentious chapter or what happens in it, what's some discussion or some points or how can we respond to people that get shocked by the whole spanking scene? How might Outlanders calmly and rationally respond?
Usually it's just by saying, just keep reading.
Well, that's what I want to say, but
just keep reading.
I said just keep reading. And then, you know, it'll come up in discussion again of, well, I know people who have been beat and they've accepted it, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, it's more than that. You've got to put yourself, you know, in Claire's position in the sense that she is not in a place of her time. And then you have to put yourself in Jamie's position where this is the norm of this time. And the thing is, I think even as Jamie does it, and we've said this, he doesn't do it in the sense of the norm of his time. He takes the time to explain to her what's going on. And, you know, he doesn't even do it in his normalcy. Am I making sense? You know what I'm saying, right?
Yes. Yeah. He says, I could do this, yeah, to you and this to you and lock you up for a week and feed you bread and water or, mm-hmm, something. And he's like, I could do that. And it's well within my right.
Right.
They were property.
Yeah.
So he not only takes the time to explain to her. And again, if someone is dead set against accepting or even going forward,
yes,
once they get that scene, you know, no, if someone is set against it or if they have a certain background, you know, maybe they just, it hits too close to home.
Yeah.
You know, as a human being, you have to absolutely respect where they're coming from. I would never want to force someone to be uncomfortable in a read, but I would ask them to, I would, like you said, I would say it's not spoiling things to say, look, there are 7, 8, potentially, you know, more books,
uh-huh,
after this, there, it never happens again.
Exactly.
He gives a promise and he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So she learns, albeit more painfully, about the seriousness of what she had done because it wasn't just disobeying him. You know, you can get down to that. It was putting an entire community,
yeah,
in danger.
Yeah.
And so, again, not to say that it was a great thing to happen Sorry, we have a cat walking around here.
That's all right.
It's definitely not acceptable by our standards, even by Claire's standards.
Right.
That was not the norm.
Right.
But number one, I would say look at time and place. Second thing would be he never did it again. He made a promise and he stuck to it.
Yeah.
And the third thing was it wasn't just, quote unquote, him punishing her.
Right.
It was him trying to put a wrong right.
Right.
She was being shunned. And if he had refused to take care of things, likely he could have been turned out.
Right.
I mean, that because because she was an extension of him, you know, she was basically his property. He had to put his own house in order to be able to be brought back into the fold, if you will. So that doesn't make it any easier of a conversation.
No.
But I think the most important thing is it's the time and the setting.
You know, and I think not giving anything away, if somebody is disturbed enough by this scene, I think it's important to ask them what it is about it that bothers them. Because if it is something that hits close to home, this might not be the best book for them because of Wentworth. So I think it's important that if somebody has an objection to this scene, you, as somebody who's already read it, needs to understand why, because maybe you get a chance to tell them, look, this probably isn't the good book for you because of XYZ.
Exactly. And, you know, and that's very fair. I mean, at that point, you're not talking about giving a spoiler. You're trying to help someone who has.
Exactly.
If they share with you what their experiences are, great. Then you can say, yeah, you might want to stick away from this book.
Yeah.
But if it's something that they don't want to tell you about, they just say, I'm uncomfortable, then, you know, we have to understand where someone's coming from. It may be just gentler to say, you know, this may not be the book for you.
Right.
And that's okay. And that's okay.
Right. And it is. It's okay.
And we can't, yes, and we cannot think that we, oh my gosh, you know, I'm an Outlander crusader. I have to bring everyone to our side. It's not about sides. It's I would love the entire universe to read this book and enjoy it the way I do.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand that just like some people's books are not my cup of tea, some books are, not every book is for every person.
Right.
And I understand that.
Right. I think we answered that very well, by the way.
I think we did too. And I didn't even think it was going to be answered like that. So I like that.
Virtual high five. Right on.
There you go. Woohoo. Three-way high five.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Marley, so much for joining us and telling us more about yourself, your history and your development and your industry and your podcast and your interviews. And also for joining us on this very interesting read-along for this very important chapter.
Right. Well, you're more than welcome. If you ever need me to come back to talk about other chapters, like, I would love to. Just, we don't have to talk about me. I'm boring. I'm sure people fast forward.
Oh, no, never. We'll always ask you about you. Don't worry.
I love talking about Outlander. So I've been listening to your podcast, and like, I want to chime in and talk with you guys all the time.
I'm
like, oh, but they're, you know, it's pre-recorded. Oh, shoot. So, like, seriously, never need me. Just let me know, because I would love to join you. I love it. And, you know, people
we
can always.
Don't you worry. Right. We will definitely call you back.
I would love it. I would love it.
Because
this is fun.
Well, we do enjoy the read-alongs with just ourselves. We enjoy any read-along. But when the times that we've had, I think, the most maybe thought-provoking.
Uh-huh.
It's when we've had that third voice.
You know, that third voice to agree with me and gang up on Ginger. That's what I need, really.
Absolutely. What is it about? You're not supposed to gang up on me. I'm supposed to be your kind of partner, girl.
I love it.
Anyway, well, thank you so much for joining us. And I can't speak for Summer, but I had, okay, she's pshawing me now. So we had a great time, and as you offered, we know, or pretty darn stinking tootin' sure, that we will be taking you up on that offer.
I would love it. Anytime. Literally anytime. Because, I mean, I could talk about Outlander all the time. I do.
Oh, so could we. We started a podcast.
I know. I'm so jealous of you starting a podcast about it.
Oh,
like,
Lord
I'm
have
so
mercy.
Tempted. Well, so tempted.
Oh.
I think we could have some wonderful conversations, especially about some of the chapters coming up. And, I mean, there's just so much to talk about. I love it. So, yeah, call me anytime you need me.
Thank you again so much for joining us. And everyone, thank you for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/OutlanderPod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
dreamt it last night that my young